Good morning, everyone. The State of Arizona Board of Chiropractic Examiners will now come to order. It's April 23rd, 2025 at 9 a.m. Meeting today is being held virtually only at 1740 West Adams Street, Phoenix, Arizona. Ms. Vanderveen, could I please have a roll call?
Dr. Kevin Lees?
Present.
Dr. George Camacho. Second call for Dr. George Camacho. Mr. Mitchell Turpinson?
Present.
Dr. Wayne Bennett?
Present.
Ms. Angela Powell?
Present. Okay. There are four board members present in person, and we have a quorum. We will now state any conflicts of interest for which the board members will be recusing themselves from today's agenda. Members, if you have any conflicts of interest, please state the tab number and the reason for your recusal. If you have no conflicts of interest, and then state that as a fact. We'll start with you, Dr. Bennett.
I have no conflicts of interest.
Mr. Turbinson?
I have no conflicts of interest.
Ms. Dr. Lees?
I have no conflicts of interest.
And I have no conflicts of interest. Angela Powell. Okay. Let the record reflect that the board members have been furnished with licensure reports, investigative reports, and exhibits for each matter on the board's agenda today. Would the members please indicate your name and call whether you have reviewed the board's investigative materials for each item on today's agenda? And again, we will begin with you, Dr. Bennett.
Yes, I have received and reviewed the materials.
Mr. Turbinson.
Yes, I have received and reviewed the materials.
Dr. Lees.
I have received and reviewed the materials.
And I have also, Angela Powell, received the materials and reviewed them. Okay, moving forward. My name is Angela Powell, and I'm the public member of the and also the board's chair. We do not have any newly licensed chiropractic licensees attending today's meeting. So at this time, I would remind everyone to please make sure their cell phones are on silent or turned off. Everyone appearing virtually via Zoom, please mute your microphone until the matter is called or your matter is called. This is an open meeting and it's being recorded. The audio portion will be posted on the board's website. Please be sure to state your full name when you're speaking on the record and speak slowly and clearly. Let's start with our consent agenda. I'm going to be flipping back and forth to screen so I won't lose you, but just so you know, if you lose sight of me, okay? Our consent agenda. Items listed on the consent agenda are item number 6, item 6K, applications for licensure recommended to grant licensure application on 1191 Nathan Richard Corrigan. Items on the consent agenda are accompanied by recommendations from the board staff. Board members have reviewed the materials and the recommendations. We are prepared to vote on each matter as they appear on the agenda. Pulling the matter means that you would like, excuse me, that you are party to the complaint or to the matter and do not agree with the recommendations and that you would like to make you would like to speak for up to 5 minutes to address the board. If you wish us to pull the matter, please raise your hand so we can note that you have intended to do so. In the matter, excuse me, if the matter is removed from the consent agenda, it will likely have to be re-agendized for a later meeting. Nonetheless, if someone wishes to have an item pulled from the consent agenda, please raise your hand. Ms. Vanderveen, anyone? Okay. A party or complaint for agenda item number, which one are we doing? What is the agenda item number, Ms. Vanderveen?
I don't think that, Ms. Madam Chairman, I think that since we have no hands raised, then and no one has wished to pull an item, I think you're okay to just go ahead and accept a motion at that point. Is that not correct?
Yes. Okay. And I would welcome a motion at this point.
Madam Chairman, I move that the recommendations from the consent agenda with this single case be approved.
Do I have a second?
I second that, Kevin Lees.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
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 Okay, those opposed. All right, then the recommendations pass. All right, and our second case number 251419, Benny Edward Nixon, licensure by examination. Correct? Doctor, are you with us? Is he present, Alyssa?
He's not present. Nikki's gonna call him right now.
Okay.
Or she's, yep, one's sure. Somebody's calling Race and somebody, so let's give him just a minute to get logged on.
And we don't have legal counsel present either, right?
They did not have legal counsel.
Okay, give him a few minutes. Anyone attempting to call in? The doctor's not required to be present, is he?
They are not. It would be easier if they were present and available to answer questions and provide some clarification.
Right. Do we want to circle back to Dr. Nixon?
We can, but I don't know that Dr. Race is here yet either. So I think we'd be waiting for either.
All right. Then we will pause.
Connie just said he's logging on, so we'll be good in just a second.
All right.
Hang on. Steph was just sending them the link to get into the meeting real quick.
Dr. Race is here first if you guys want to go ahead and take him first.
Okay. Is Dr. Dixon, Nixon.
Dr. Nixon is logging on.
Doctor. So if we wanted to just take the agenda out of order and go down to Dr. Race, we could just start with Dr. Race and come back to Dr. Nixon.
Well, if he's logging on now, it's just going to be another minute, right?
It's up to you.
I hope. Yeah.
We might as well wait and just keep the agenda in order.
Okay.
Dr. Nixon, ready?
I haven't seen him join yet.
Okay. And who is the doctor we were going to take out of place?
Dr. Race.
Okay, let's go ahead and do Dr. Race.
Okay, give me one second.
Morning.
Good morning.
Okay.
Ms. Powell, would you like a brief?
Please.
Dr. Race is applying for licensure with the board via examination. He has been licensed in Idaho, Nevada, and Texas. He currently does not hold an active license. He did answer yes to the declaration question, have you ever been arrested, charged with, indicted, or under investigation for a misdemeanor felony requiring resolution in the court? He said he had a misdemeanor DUI and an open container charged, and that he had complied with all the items for probation in Idaho, and he is currently on unsupervised probation. He also answered yes to, have you ever been arrested, convicted of an offense of misdemeanor or felony? He stated he had a misdemeanor DUI and an open container charge in regards to that. And then, so based on the board's investigative review, there are two DUIs, one that was received in November of 2021 and a second on March 5th of 2023. He provided licensure verifications for all three jurisdictions, but he currently does not, as I stated, all of those licenses are expired or lapsed, and so he does not currently hold an active license in any jurisdiction. And with that concludes my report.
Thank you. Do board members, if you have any questions, we'll start with you, Dr. Bennett.
Is it appropriate to have Dr. Reed or Dr. Race?
Forgive me. Yes, Dr. Race, we have received your application and reviewed all of the information on your behalf. Would you like to take a couple of minutes to speak on your behalf?
Sure.
Write a statement. Okay. Thank you.
Well, thanks for your time, everybody. There was a dark part in my life that I made some bad choices, made some bad mistakes, going through a lot of personal things. Bouncing back from COVID almost took me out, and my wife got the call saying he's going to die, get your affairs in order. Well, during that time, I lost a very large integrated medical practice up in Boise, and that kind of messed with my head a little bit. So I've had the unfortunate experience now twice of working for providers, one in Boise that was committing fraud, so I moved to Las Vegas, and then he was committing fraud. He was going behind my back and changing my notes and adding things that I didn't do. And so I had to get out of there. So I applied for a job that was in Nevada, and they said, we have this opportunity in Arizona. So what about moving to Arizona? I said, that sounds great. Sounds a great opportunity. And here I am applying for licensure in the state. So that's why the lapsing of licenses, because I figured I don't need one in Nevada because I'm down here to start a clinic in Arizona. So, but as far as my DUIs, yeah, I guess it was a combination of two things: losing a practice I worked on for 18 years, and also leaving a very high demand religion that messed with my head a lot. So, but you know, the good news is my wife's still beside me, and I've moved on, and I'm not planning to ever, ever, ever go down that path again. So, anyways, any questions about that, or
Dr. Bennett, would you like to start?
Sure. Hello, Dr. Race. I'm Dr. Wayne Bennett. So what is the lapse been? I assume you're not practicing currently. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And what is the time frame between your now and the last time you were actively in practice?
Well, I guess my license expired in Nevada in the end of the year. So in 2024. So what's that?
Yeah. And actually, my question is not about when you were licensed. My question is when you were actually actively in practice.
Oh, back in December of 2024.
Okay, good. And the reason I ask is because if there's been a lapse of you know, a couple of years or so, we would want to take into consideration a spec exam, but it sounds like that's fine. And you're planning on practicing here in the state is it going to be in an employee situation where you'll be working with other providers, or will you be the point of the spear starting a clinic, or what's the plan there?
So I'll be an employee, and I'll be doing about 2 days a week of chiropractic rehab care.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I have no other questions.
Okay. Mr. Turbinson.
No questions from me. Thank you.
Dr. Lees.
Just one question. You're an unsupervised probation doctor, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
For and another that month expires and a half. This year?
Yeah, in about 6 weeks.
Okay. That was my only question. Thank you.
And doctor, just so that I understand, you are going to be employed? You have a job set up already?
Yes.
Okay, great. All right. Do any board members, I would entertain a motion at this point.
Madam Chairman, by way of discussion, the staff has recommended a consent agreement consisting of Dr. Race being responsible for the cost of compliance, get this matter reported with the National Practitioner Database, take and pass the EBAS parts relative to substance abuse, unprofessional conduct, and professional standards, and to complete the PBI educational course on ethics and professionalism with an AIM letter. And I think that that's probably a reasonable recommendation. I do have a question though, and that is, has Dr. Race, have you had any dialogue with staff about being offered a consent agreement and what it might consist of?
I've never heard the term before, so no.
Okay, can we get an explanation for Dr. Race about this?
So since this falls outside of the executive director's delegated authority to approve licensure, it comes to the board, and the board has the option to either grant licensure or to offer a consent agreement. You would have to meet the requirements of the consent agreement, and once you complete those, you would be granted licensure in the state of Arizona. Or the board can choose to deny your licensing application, of which then you would not be licensed here. So those are kind of the three options. The board staff, based on review and the information provided, recommended to the board the consent agreement for the EBAS, which is the ethics and boundary assessment test, and the PBI professionalism course, just with an AIM letter, which provides an evaluation of during the time that you take the course, and that's reported to the board, and just kind of provides and gives the board kind of clarity on the matter.
As kind of a fitness test, is that right?
Not really a fitness, it's more like an evaluation, like, are you truly genuine in understanding your situation, how you got there? Do you have the guardrails in place to ensure that it doesn't happen again? It's those kind of things that the facilitator provides that evaluation and then provides that back to the board. Does that answer your question, Dr. Bennett?
Yes, I do a follow-up. Dr. Race, do you understand what a consent agreement is?
No, I do not.
Okay, can we get a definition of what a consent agreement is for him?
So the consent agreement is an agreement between the board and the licensee as to here are the subsequent requirements for licensure based on the additional information found in the background check, and that you are agreeing to comply with those things as a term for licensure and the timeline in which to complete those. And that once completed, those items have been submitted to the board, that the board at then at that time would provide licensure. So it's just an agreement between you and the board about the final steps to licensure, just to ensure you're safe and competent to practice.
And that's the EBAS?
It would be the EBAS exam and the PBI course.
PBI. Okay. And what's the EBAS again?
Ethics and Boundary Assessment. It's a written exam just kind of to provide the board with some information regarding where you are.
Okay.
It's graded by three evaluators and just kind of provide some insights into your assessment for ethics and professionalism.
Okay. And the PBI is the
it's a course. It's a 2-day course on professionalism and ethics and boundaries, just recognizing just, and again, and making sure you have some of those guardrails in place to make sure you don't slip back in and have a good hold on your recovery.
And that's like an online course thing, or?
It is. It's done online. It's a live course done virtually.
Okay. And where do I get information about registering?
So we will draft up this agreement. The agreement will be provided to you, and we'll provide you the links for that information and where to go for that. So part of the discussion in today is are you willing to enter into that type of an agreement with the board for licensure?
Then by way of follow-up comment, Madam Chair, as a board, our primary concern is public safety.
Of course.
It looks like there's some boundaries. There have been some boundary challenges, certainly in Dr. Race's past, but there's been some boundary issues. And so I think that the recommendations are reasonable because the board is responsible to assure that those boundaries are in place and that it's been documented in the event that if none of these are disciplinary measures, but we need to know that those boundaries are in place. Should there be a reoccurrence of any of this, then these would have been in place and we could, then it would be moving forward to a disciplinary matter. Now I have a question for board staff as well. And that is, I don't see a time recommendation relative to this recommendation relative to these, benchmarks or things to be done. And I know that I believe that there's a rule that says that if once a application has been applied for, there's a timeline on when that application also expires. Is that not correct?
There's a 120 business days for the board to make a decision.
Yeah, that sounds right to me. okay, so we would want to set a timeline, and it's certainly in Dr. Race's interest to get this taken care of as quickly as possible. So with that, Madam Chair, I would move that the board offer a consent agreement to Dr. Race with the following requirements: that the applicant be responsible for the cost of compliance, that the matters be reported to the National Practitioners Data Bank, that Dr. Race take and pass the EBAS parts on substance abuse, on professional conduct and professional standards, and that he complete the PBI education course on ethics and professionalism with an AIM letter within a period of 90 days.
Okay. Do I have a second?
This is Dr. Kevin Lees. I second.
All right. All in favor say aye.
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 Okay. Those opposed, the motion passes.
Madam Chair, members of the board, and Alyssa, is this something typically that you would do a roll call because it is disciplinary for the applicant?
I didn't think it was disciplinary.
Alyssa, do you have any thoughts on that, on how in the past the board would vote? Would they do something like this with a voice vote? And Alyssa, I think you may be on mute.
In the past, we've done it on a voice vote because they're just offering a consent agreement, not taking, and then since that's an agreement. But if you'd like us to proceed differently, we can.
Yeah, if that's okay, just to amuse the substitute, if we could just do a roll call.
Absolutely.
That would be great. And then one more question, Madam Chair, members of the board. In the event that he does not sign the consent agreement, is it the board's intent that this matter would just come back to you for further review?
If he decides not to sign the consent agreement, I would suggest that we would not be issuing a license. I don't think there's any room for compromise there.
Okay. And if that's the case, maybe we can entertain a second motion after this to address that. If not signed, then the board would move to deny his application pursuant to, you know, statute. Okay. I suspect that would be referenced in the consent agreement.
Okay.
Would it be appropriate to make a friendly amendment to my motion to that effect so we could do it all in one fell swoop?
That certainly is a way to address both. Yes. Thank you.
All right, Madam Chairman, I would move to amend my initial motion to include that if the consent agreement is not agreed to, then the board would fail to revoke or fail to issue the license.
Okay. Do we give a time, a period of time for him to sign that consent agreement?
Usually it's 10 days.
Okay.
If not signed within 10 days.
Being that he is unfamiliar with consent agreements, can we give him a little bit longer? So that he can check
mm-hmm.
he wants to, just like 2 weeks.
So 10 business days would be 2 weeks.
Okay, good.
And then Dr. Bennett, members of the board, is it my understanding that the basis for the denial would be for the acts of unprofessional conduct that would be included, that you included in the consent agreement?
That would be behind the motivation behind my motion, yes.
Thank you.
And by the way, just point of order, I think we need second to the modified motion.
That is correct.
This is Dr. Kevin Lees. I second the modified amendment.
Thank you.
Okay. The motion, all in favor, we need a roll call now or no?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Alyssa? Mm-hmm.
Dr. Wayne Bennett?
Aye.
Dr. Kevin Lees?
Aye.
Mr. Mitchell Turbinson?
Aye.
Ms. Angela Powell?
Aye. Okay. The motion passes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Next on the agenda is, and Doctor, if you have any further questions, you can call the board office and ask to speak to Ms. Van Der Veen.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Next on the agenda is item number 15, executive, is that right? Executive, did we miss someone here, Alyssa?
No, we need to go back up to Dr. Nixon. Sorry, back up on your agenda.
All right, let me scroll back up here.
And he still has not joined, so I'm assuming we'll proceed without.
Oh, no, I thought I saw his cell phone on there. I think he's there.
Okay.
Oh, yes, I
do. Dr. Nixon, are you with us? Yes, he is. No, he's not.
I see a phone that looks suspiciously like his, but it's muted.
Oh,
hello. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, Dr. Nixon?
Yes, ma'am.
Good morning.
I'm sorry, I couldn't turn my mute off. I figured it out.
Okay, good. All right. Board members have reviewed, excuse me, Ms. Van Der Veen, could I get a brief, please?
Yes. Dr. Nixon is applying for licensure. By examination, Dr. Nixon was previously licensed with the board until December 31st of 2021 when he failed to renew his license. He attempted to renew in 2023 and was not eligible and needed to reinstate his license. He did not reinstate his license within the statutory timeframe. The board provided him notice and directions to complete that reinstatement application. And so his license on January 1st of 2024 was placed to lapse status. Subsequently, the board also sent him a cease and desist letter for practicing on a lapse license. And since he has not been licensed since 2021, it appears that he would need to take and pass the spec examination. based on that information, which would be consistent with the board's substantive policy statement for retired licenses, which after 2 years, they were required to take the and pass the spec exam. Additionally, in Dr. Nixon's history in 2015, he also had a complaint against him for driving under the influence, and he did not notify the board within the 10-day requirement. The board did issue him a non-disciplinary advisory letter for failure to report within the retired time frame, but it also should be noted that his background report did not include the information on the DUI. And with that, that concludes my summary. Does the board have any questions for me?
Dr. Bennett?
Not for executive director, no.
Okay. Anyone else for Ms. Vanderveen? Okay. Dr. Nixon, the board has reviewed your application and the letters of recommendation submitted on your behalf. Would you like to take 5 minutes and make a statement?
First of all, I did go and sit in front of the board back, I believe it was in 2014 when the DUI happened. And then I did sit in front of the board and was excused of that. And also, I haven't been practicing because I was a Phoenix firefighter, and I recently retired in October of 2000, and I was working on trying to get my license back, and apparently figured out that the board said that I hadn't done anything since 2021, which wasn't a problem because I wasn't practicing. I was working full-time as a firefighter. As far as that goes, but I had sent payments in and my CEs for both 2022 and 2023, thinking that they were accepted. So I never knew that my license was lapsed at that time, and I wasn't practicing. So I was just turning my things in and thinking everything was fine until I believe it was last year I went to make a payment and it wouldn't allow me to make the payment. And I was like, okay, this is odd. Started figuring more information out. I never received a letter saying that my license was in any type of jeopardy. I've just always made my payments during the year, done my CEs, which I have receipts for the monies that I sent to the board. And I also have, you know, my CE receipts. So I've been trying to maintain my license over these years. And it came to my attention this last year. I actually did make a payment this year and they accepted my payment, which was a late payment for, it was like $480 something. It accepted it. And then come to find out, they're like, no, you lapsed way back in 2021. So I understand. I'm not trying to, you know, say that it's not my own fault. Yes, I could have been better at it, and I'm fine with that. I'm just working on trying to get my license. I'm retired, and I'm really looking forward to putting 100% of myself into my chiropractic career, and I'm just hoping that I'll be able to do that.
Okay. Would any of the board members like to ask questions, starting with you, Dr. Bennett?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. Dr. Nixon, I'm Dr. Wayne Bennett. And I do have a question, and thank you for filling in some of the gaps in terms of your efforts there. When did you last treat a patient?
I was last treating patients in 2012.
Okay. then I would.
12 or 13, right around that time.
Okay. Yeah. So at least 10 years. Yeah. I have no further questions.
Okay. Mr. Turbinson.
I actually just have a question for Ms. Vanderveen. Am I able to take it out of order?
Yes, go ahead.
What was our letter in January 2024 references practicing information about practicing, but it doesn't specify what that is or what that was. Are you able to fill us in on what evidence we had that Dr. Nixon was practicing?
I looked into that. I didn't find any specifics around that. I believe we had a phone call with Dr. Nixon where that information came out that he was practicing. And so based on that, the board staff sent him a letter reminding him that he did not have an active license and therefore could not be treating patients.
Thank you. And Dr. Nixon, do you recall making those statements about practicing?
I wasn't practicing in 2024, no.
And how about in 2023?
No.
Okay. I have no further questions. Thank you.
Okay. Dr. Lees?
Hey, Dr. Nixon, I just have one question. You had a DWI in 2014 or 15. Have you had anything since that period?
No.
Okay. That was my only question. Thank you.
All right.
I have a follow-up question.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Nixon, it's Nixon, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sorry, Dr. Nixon, what were the circumstances around surrounding the fact, I guess you took a an ethics and jurisprudence test in March of 2025, is that correct?
Yes, sir, I just took that within the last month, I believe.
And what was your, what was the motivation? What prompted you to take that test?
Because it was asked of me to do that, because I'm trying to get my license reinstated.
Okay. All right.
And I believe I got a 84%, and that was a couple of weeks ago. I turned that information in and just trying to get this everything squared away as fast as possible.
Yes, sir. I'm looking at your scores at this moment, and you did pass the test. But I'm looking particularly at the two categories of inactive status and renewals. And in those portions of the test, you got every question wrong.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think it kind of relates to what we're dealing with here right now.
I know, that stinks.
And so I think that there's something telling there to that extent. And that's just a comment. I have no further questions.
Okay. Board members, any discussion?
Madam Chair, my opinion is that by way of just discussion that the staff has made recommendations. I appreciate the fact that this needs to be reported to the National Practitioner Database and that the cost of compliance should be covered by the doctor, and that the PBI course on ethics and professionalism, I think there's some educational opportunities that need to be put in place here relative to that. I don't see in this case a need to evaluate this this doctor with regard to boundaries. And so if I were to make a motion at this point in time, which I am not, I'm just raising this up by point of discussion,
mm-hmm.
My inclination would be to make those three recommendations and not make any kind of, the other point, the key point here, sorry that I overlooked, is that we don't have volition with regard to the spec exam. The language in the substantive policy statement is required that if the doctor has been inactive for, I believe, 2 years, certainly for more than 10 years, that the taking and passing of the spec exam is mandatory. We don't even have a choice relative to making that decision. I don't see the need for the EBAS in addition to that. So that's sort of my thinking about it. I'd be interested in what the other board members have to say.
Board members, any discussion?
Dr. Bennett, I would agree. It seems like we approved him to be relicensed in 2015 after this incident took place. So it seems like if we're questioning the ethics and boundaries now based off of substance abuse, it seems like we're taking a different route than what they agreed upon in 2015. It seems maybe that's unfair.
Okay.
I also wanted to ask too, I was trying to look for it really quick. It seems also that the jurisprudence questions may be outdated. It asks about when the license expires and when the payment's due, and those have been changed. If I'm
You're
we were
correct.
Discussing that today. Yeah.
You're correct. And we're in the process of actually moving the, I think it will be on June's agenda of working with NBCE to move our jurisprudence exam over to NBCE. So that is next on my priority list.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Okay. I would entertain a motion at this point.
Madam Chairman, I would move that a consent agreement be offered to the doctor, which would consist of him being responsible for the cost of the compliance, that the matter be reported to the National Practitioner Database, that he take and pass the spec exam with a score of 75% or higher, and that he complete the PBI education course on ethics and professionalism with an AIM letter, all to have occurred within the next 90 days. And in the event that he does not sign the consent agreement, and on the advice of our substitute attorney general, that that licensure not be granted.
Can I interject real quick on the 90 days? The spec exam's only offered twice a year.
Ah, thank you.
We may want to give him 6 months.
Okay, I'd modify my motion to 6 months.
Okay. Do I have a second?
Dr. Kevin Leeds, I second.
All in favor, say aye.
I believe, Madam Chair, that
need a roll call.
Yeah, we need a roll call relative to the.
I'm sorry. Okay, let's do the roll call, Ms. Vanderveen.
Dr. Kevin Leeds.
Aye.
Dr. Wayne Bennett.
Aye.
Mr. Mitchell Turbinson.
Aye.
Miss Angela Powell.
Aye. Okay. Do I have, that is our second?
Yes.
And do I
have second? Dr. Lee seconded the motion, and it passes for four ayes, no nays, and one absent.
Okay. And the motion passes.
Yes.
All right. Doctor, if you have any questions, you can contact the board office and Ms. Vanderveen will be happy to assist you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Hey, Ms. Gillum, could you allow me to share my screen so I can share my report, please?
Yes, one moment, please. Does that allow you to share the screen?
Hang on just a second.
Okay.
Apparently, I got signed out of my Google account.
Oh, no.
One moment. So we'll start with complaints and investigations. Here are the complaints going back to 2021, basically broken down by total complaints received and then by type. If you notice in 2025 over here, we've received less high complexity complaints. And so we're changing our terminology also based on the information from our audit and no longer calling them by priority. We are calling them by complexity. So in terms of highly complex cases, we only have 6, low 7, and then medium right there at 17 for a total of 30. So you can see last year we had 57. I don't know that we are on track to receive as many complaints as we did last year, but probably will be closer to 2022-21 timeframe based on what we're receiving.
Alyssa, I have a question about that, about the information here.
Yes, sir.
The green columns, can we go back to that slide for a moment?
Yeah, sure, just a second. The green are total complaints received. So we've received 30, and then they're broken up by medium is 17. So those are medical malpractice claims. In substandard treatment would fall into that medium category. Low would be advertising, social media, failing to identify self as DC, and then the highly complex would be sexual misconduct, practicing without a license, those types of complaints. Does that help provide some clarity for you?
Well, It's good information, but no, my specific question is I don't see pending. I see a light green pending category, and I don't see any information on that, but I do see that the total cases is the sum total, and so I assume they're all pending.
So pending means that they have not gone through intake. So we have a new process out of the audit. So now we have an intake process where we meet with the AG and we go through each case and determine the complexity, the allegations, the content of the subpoena. And so we don't have any in the pending status because everything's at this point has gone through intake.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Total. So here's just a breakdown of where we still have open cases. And we still have one case in 21, 22, and then a total of four in 2023, two that still need to go to initial action. And so the board has not seen those yet. And then we have the 30. There are 30 left from 2024 that still need to go to initial action. And then there are 29 from 2025 that still need to be reviewed. So total, we have 66 open cases. There are 60 that are still pending review. And of course, the oldest case goes back to June of 2021. And we are diligently working to address those and move those forward.
Is that what our new investigator is spending more time on?
Yes, he is working on the backlog of those cases. So at the moment we have, I would say about 2.5 investigators dedicated solely to investigating at this point.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. this is just kind of a historic look back on total cases closed by the board, both overall number of cases on the agenda and then by priority. So since I started as interim executive director to today, we have closed 146 cases. So significant work is happening. And I know sometimes it doesn't feel like it, but we are moving things forward. But you can see that we've had a lot of peaks and valleys. And I'm really trying to create some stability in moving forward into this next year.
We do recognize and appreciate everything you've done so far, Alyssa.
Thank you. So this is just kind of more of a further historic look back of just open to closed. like I said, we have a total of 66 open cases, but since going back all the way to 2018, total, we've closed 259 cases. So we are working, and those, you know, every month we are getting closer and closer to really just working current, not in a backlog state. So that is good news. Average number of cases open more than 180 days. And this is something that I'm working to address based on the information received in the audit. But just on average, we have usually about 45 cases that are over the 180 day mark. So I am working with the consultant on drafting a policy to address this and really lay out what our statutory requirements are in terms of notice, to kind of come up with a good model for what it really should our close rate date like be. How long does it really take us to close a case and get that into a policy? So I am working diligently on that and should have something for you, hopefully by June.
Madam Chair, and Alyssa, we're acutely aware of this as an issue, and we are also aware that this is an issue with other regulatory boards in our state. And the last time I did any inquiry into this, there was no regulatory board, healthcare regulatory board, that was meeting 180-day timeline. My question here is there any kind of there seems to be perhaps a politically motivated hot button going on here about, well, let's get these regulatory boards under 180 days. And as I've looked at this matter, there are factors that are outside the control of the board that in almost all of these cases where they're in other jurisdictional activities, other agencies that are completely beyond the control of our board or any other healthcare regulatory board. And so all of this is a preface to this question. Is there any kind of collaborative effort to make this case and make our legislative oversight people understand that you know in that it's not all of the factors that determine this timeline are not in our control, and that the, some of the real significant factors which impact every board are outside of the control of the regulatory boards. Is this argument being made? Is there any collaboration to get this education going to these lawmakers, or are you aware of anything like that?
Aware of anything like that. I know that Governor Hobbs just vetoed a directive that was aimed at the osteopathic board and the medical board, yes, specifically around closing complaints within that certain time frame. And so we are working diligently. I've been working with the consultants. She did a significant deep dive nationwide to see what the average close rate was for other chiropractic board nationwide, and then as well as other boards such as the Board of Nursing, medical boards, to kind of try to find what that number is. And there's not a board nationally that we have found yet that's closing cases in 180 days.
Yeah, for probably exactly the same reasons.
So trying to use and leverage some of that information as we develop this policy and kind of identify what truly the realistic objective number is, I think is really important. And when I do meet with elected officials and legislators, and when I'm providing comments on some of these bills that have come to us, I do point that out, that nobody's meeting this objective. And you can't, because of some of the restraints that are in our own statutes.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much.
So, and we will just continue working on this and continue to have those conversations. This is just, I just try to keep track of where everything is in the sphere of things. And just, you have one case that's right now pending formal hearing, which is scheduled for next month. We have one case that's under an interim order. And then we have four that are continued. So that's just kind of where everything is, that's not just holding it initial action, just to provide some clarity for where cases are and that we are on top of them and we are monitoring them. Okay, so licensure and applications. So far this year, we've received 95 applications and we've issued 85 licenses. So we are already have more than we had last year. And so I would guess we are probably trending closer to where we were in 2023 versus where we were in 2024. So things are very busy in that regard. So that's licenses. Renewals. So far this year, we've received 670 applications for renewal. Again, we've moved to that new cycle. So they are coming in month by month versus the bulk of them in December of the end of the year. So in 2024, we received 2,350 applications. And thus far this year, we've received just 670. And so just kind of to provide a look back of statuses where things are, as you can see, inactive, retired, and inactive and retired, we are pretty consistent on just where those statuses are. But you can see we've had an increase in active over 23 and 24. So we have more active licensees than we've had in the past. We also have less licensees on probation, and we have less licensees on administrative suspension. This is just how many applications we are receiving by month. So in January, and so just to provide some clarity on January, January includes November and December, because that's when we opened up the renewal period for this new cycle. So that's really has 3 months in it. And then February, March, and April. And obviously April was through Monday. And what we have experienced is we receive a huge influx of applications on the last day of the month. So I expect to we'll receive another 80 applications probably before the end of the month for those licensees. And then you'll notice that we are working through some incompletes. So Now that we have Thintia, we are completing a 100% audit on everyone who submits their application. So we are verifying those continuing education certificates, making sure they meet our requirements and statutes, and that if they don't, their application is held as incomplete and they have 60 days to complete that. We provide them notice. If they do not complete that within the 60 days, they are sent an administrative suspension letter and have to pay the late fee and submit the required information in order for it to have their license renewed. So we have, as you can see, almost all of January's cleaned up. February is pretty close. And then obviously March has the most because we just finished that March cycle and we're starting to collect some in April. So we do have a bulk of those. And then now we have a process where we are sending out those incomplete letters at the 60 day mark if they do not complete their application. License statuses, like I said, we have the most active licensees we've had since pre 2020, I believe. So we're up to 2,380. Fewest admin suspension, we're at 164, and probation 6. So just kind of a look at where we are licensure wise. We've processed so far this year 36 reinstatement applications. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about specialty certificates. I have a concern here. So as we transitioned to Thintia, previously, when you applied for licensure, you could apply for your specialty certificate at the same time. And so usually it was kind of a one-to-one ratio where we were issuing PMMTP certificates at the same time we were issuing their license. Now it's a second process. So once we issue their license, the system recognizes them and they're eligible to submit for their PMMTP certificates. And in Thintia, we don't require them to resubmit their test scores or their transcripts because we already have those. But they are required to log in and pay the certificate fee and the issuance fee. Well, since we've gone to Thintia, I've seen a significant drop in our specialty certifications. You saw we issued 85 licenses. Well, we've only issued 31 certificates. And so I'm concerned that maybe we need to provide some communication. We're including in the email when we issue the license that now they're eligible to apply for their specialty certs and that they can't practice any of those outside of adjustments with their chiropractic license. And so they need to apply for that PMMTP certificate. I'm just concerned that maybe we need to follow that up with a formal letter or something to that effect, since we've had such a drop in issuing these certificates.
I think you're absolutely right, Alyssa.
So even though we're providing that communication, that email, that they can't practice any additional without that certificate, I don't see the reflection in the application. And this includes PMMTP, acupuncture, and percutaneous therapy in the 31. So it's all three certificates, not just PMMTP. So I will start working on that. And if that's something you'd like me to proceed with, I will take that. And then additionally, we've received 14 extern applications this year. We have 5 business entity applications this year, and we have 142 chiropractic assistants. And I think this kind of falls in the same vein that as we've moved toward Thintia, I think we need to start to make a more concerted effort to have previous CAs register with the board and upload those certificates and that information. And really making sure that that doctors are having their CAs register. Just, we're not seeing the volume that we saw with these in the past. And so I'm concerned that maybe not everybody's registering appropriately.
What about CAs continuing education? Any news on that front?
So that would have to be something that the board would, the board probably needs to make 2 adjustments to that. A, we're not reevaluating CA courses once they're approved. They seem to be approved for life. There's not an expiration date on those courses. That's probably something we need to evaluate. And then secondly, probably having a discussion about having CAs renew and maintain their certificate and take some ongoing continuing education. But those would be rule changes that we would need to make and have discussion on.
You can do that in the next meeting, right?
We can discuss it, but we haven't started a rulemaking package, but
okay.
Add it to the list.
So, if you would do that, that'd be great.
Yes.
I think okay. The problem is a little bit more complex than it appears to be, and we can have dialogue about it.
Absolutely. Continuing education applications. So we have thus far this year, in terms of PACE pre-checked, we've approved 561 applications. Pending to be processed, we have 153 for a total of 761. Since 2019, we've experienced 235% growth in this area. So you can see it's a bit, because the course applications are good for 2 years, you can kind of see when the renewal period hits for those courses. So like 21 kind of mirrors 23, so 25 mirrors 23. And so then on top of that, we're receiving about 30% more applications on top of the ones we're renewing. So the workload here is significant and does not match what we are charging for these applications. And so we can't support, based on the revenue that this brings in, a staff member to support this function, but it is something we absolutely need to consider because the team right now can't support this function as a part-time function.
Can the cost of another staff member just to handle applications be something we consider asking for when we do the budget, or are we looking more like putting together an external committee, appointing a committee to do this in the future?
It would probably be something that would be both. You would still need a staff member to support the committee and the work of the committee, just all the internal processing part of it, on top of that. And in terms of revenue, the board is, we're kind of, A, we need to make a rule change to adjust the cost of the application for the CAs or for the CEs rather. And we have to do that first to be able to support the employee because we are at our ceiling in terms of number of applications and the amount we're charging.
So is that on the list?
Yeah, it is very much on the list.
Okay.
So, but I just...
Can I also suggest that we explore, we're accepting that the process is what it is, and we're estimating the manpower to handle that process. And I wonder if we shouldn't be looking at the process itself. Are there alternatives to this process that we're following where we might also visit what our requirements are, and especially these days with automated, use of information technology and so forth, are there more expedient pathways, other wheels that exist already that we might explore that would reduce the workload on our staff and make this process more streamlined?
We are doing that. We are in we are almost done with the contract with CE Broker to take this portion of it off of our Adobe Sign application into the CE Broker, which would be a portal. So we are close on that, which I think will help. I just don't know how much it will totally alleviate the workload.
Okay.
I'm hoping it's helpful.
And in the meantime, do we want to mention Alyssa?
So Ms. Powell has graciously agreed to help me with, it's the regular application staff is obviously, we're approving the PACE pre-checked and getting those turned around as quickly as possible. Amber has kind of taken over that project as it has moved out of Laura, as she's moved toward the more full-time investigator. And so Amber's handling the front end of the applications and making sure they're complete. And then Ms. Powell is graciously taking the time to review the applications for the instructor requirements and the content, and making sure that they meet our requirements for continuing ed. So we are working through those 150 applications, and Angela has been gracious to work with us on that. And so that's our next kind of project, kind of clean up and catch up. So we are diligently working on that, but it's been a pretty heavy lift. So.
Yeah, I'd say it's been a very heavy lift for all of you. I'm amazed. You've done a great job.
Yeah, thank you. It's not me. It's a good team.
No, absolutely. I didn't realize the number of applications we got. I really didn't.
So here's our financial report. As you can see, our appropriation was increased, as I've told you. Expenditures were at $418,439 so far through March. Revenue, we received $252,000. It's a little below where we've been projecting. So I'm not sure how that will play out, but we'll just continue. We're monitoring very closely so far today. And then our fund balance, as you know, we took that significant hit with the sweep to the general fund. And additionally, we're getting less revenue because now we're no longer a 90-10 board, we're an 85-15. So instead of 10% of our revenue there, it's 15%. And so I think that's also part of the reduced revenue that we're seeing.
Why did we take such a heavy hit?
They swept $500,000.
And why did they do that?
They were short.
I see. Okay. That's nothing we have any control over, correct?
We do not have any control over that. So we did our best. We did work with the association to send a letter expressing that, you know, these are licensing fees. They're not general fund fees, and that the board needs its resources to be able to operate and protect the public. And
right.
So we did do that. There's no talk of that happening this year, but we will continue to monitor it.
Okay.
Just kind of where we're at. And then this just kind of shows you where we are to the fiscal year. So it's 83% done. Our expenditures are at 65%, and then revenue is much lower than anticipated, but we'll just continue to monitor that, see where we are. And with that, that completes my report. If you have any questions for me.
Doctors, Mr. Mitchelton, any questions? Okay, then we'll move right to a report from the chair. I really don't have anything new to report, except I did want you to all be aware that I was temporarily going to be helping out with the CE hours. I think it'll be a good way to transition to a committee to help with review and approve applications in the future. I hope I'm helpful, and I'm more than happy to do it. I don't think I have anything else to report that's new. Anybody have any questions, problems, issues? If not, I will officially adjourn this meeting.